This talk is brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Don't Settle by Stephanie Weinert.
Hi, everybody. Well, I have to tell you my proud news. I found out last week I'm having a boy, so Peter and I are very excited. And I have to tell you something funny, just between you and me. Don't tell Curtis and Michael Ann this, but my first FOCUS conference was when I was a sophomore in college, and I went to school in Michigan and was discipled by FOCUS missionaries, and I'm a native Floridian, so going to Michigan was very cold, and I took my first driving cross-country through the Midwest trip to go to my first FOCUS conference, which was in Lincoln, Nebraska. Any Nebraska people here? You guys cleaned up well in football last night, by the way. Congratulations. You did very well. So we went to Lincoln, Nebraska, had a wonderful conference. It was much smaller than it is this year for NC10, but it was awesome. And I have to tell you, I would never have thought, sitting in the audience at that conference, that I would be up on stage talking to you guys a few years later. So you better watch out. Curtis might get you a few years from now, and you might be up here too. But it's such an honor to be back in Florida and to be here. So how many of you are country music fans? Anybody? I knew I was in the right place today. Well, I'd like to start my topic and my talk today, which is called Don't Settle, with the chorus to a country music song that is sung by Sugarland, the band Sugarland. Anybody a fan? So there's a song called Settling that was on the radio. It was a big hit not too long ago. And in the chorus, Jennifer Nettles sings, "I ain't settling for just getting by. I've had enough so-so for the rest of my life. I'm tired of shooting too low. So raise the bar high. Just enough ain't enough this time. So I ain't settling for anything less than everything." Actually, she says everything because she's from Texas. But those lyrics are a perfect kind of introduction to my topic today, which is Don't Settle. Because in that song, it's a girl who's so frustrated, mostly with herself, because she understands that she has lowered her standards. She has made the decision to settle for Mr. Right Now instead of Mr. Forever. She's tired of those dates that she, before she even walks out the door with the guy, she knows that it's going to be a short-term relationship. And she knows that if she wants a change in her life, it has to start with her. Raising the bar high, changing her standards, making the commitment that she is going to have certain things, that she's not going to settle for anything less than that. The topic of the conference today, Made for More, is just a perfect theme for the topic of not settling in relationships. And I have struggled with this in my own life, and I know that many of you struggle with it as well. Because we live in a world where it's so easy as Catholic Christian young adults to settle for less in relationships than what God has planned for us. And I remember being in college. I went to a Catholic college, so I was sure that when I got to campus, I was going to meet my husband. I mean, they were all Catholic, right? He had to be there in college. And 4 years later, I graduated, and I hadn't found him there at college. So then I moved back to my home state of Florida, and I didn't really know what to do because now I wasn't in a community where they were all Catholic, and I thought it was going to be easier to choose a guy to date. Now I was out in the world starting my working career, and it was a lot harder to find guys who were Catholic and lived up to my standards who were also eligible to date, especially because my family lived on the west coast of Florida, which is pretty much Retirementville, USA. And so even to find a guy who's my age, let alone one who's a Christian or a Catholic, was really hard. So in those first few years as a college graduate, I wasn't sure what to do. I was afraid, in a sense, that I was going to die a Catholic old maid unless I lowered my standards somehow. And I was working in full-time young adult ministry. I had started working with EWTN and launching their radio talk show for young adults, which was very exciting, and God gave me a lot of really wonderful experiences through working with EWTN and working in radio and being on the air. But still, the ache in my heart for my vocation, which I knew was to the married life, was so strong, and sometimes it was painful. I just ached to be joined in unity to what I knew I was made for. And yet I couldn't find it, and I felt like God was taking forever to bring me into my vocation. So I spent most of my 20s single, went out on dates, but usually they were short-lived because I figured out kind of fast, well, this isn't what I really wanted in life. So I wasn't in a lot of long-term relationships, but yet I just so desperately wanted to be joined in the covenant of marriage. I'm getting ahead of myself because I really feel that the temptations I faced in wanting to settle, wanting to compromise what my standards were, to be able to date someone, to be able to fall in love, to have someone close to me, to be in a relationship, which is so easy, is so not worth it. I've been married 5 months and 28 days, and I'm not counting. I just happen to know 5 months and 28 days. They've been the best 5 months and 28 days of my life. And all the happiness that I have found in marriage, now I feel like God has just taught me the lesson the hard way. It is so worth waiting as long as it takes. And now I look back on my college years and my early 20s, which I felt like was just forever and ever and ever, and see how fast it went by and how just I would, if I had known what joy there is in marriage when you wait for the right person, I would have waited decades more. And that probably sounds crazy because if I was in college still and listening to me up here and say, well, I don't want to wait decades more. And I didn't want to wait decades either. But how worth it is to wait. But I want to give you guys a little dating test about how picky you are with who you choose to go out on dates with. And we're going to see how, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand or anything. You just mentally pick which category you feel that you fall into. And we'll start with picky. And I'll let you in on my secret. I think that being picky is a good thing. If you're picky, you've given careful consideration to what the standards are for your life and what you're looking for in a future spouse. You know yourself well, and you have taken the time with your group of friends and the situations that God, the experiences that God has given you in your life to kind of paint a mental picture of what you're looking for. So that when somebody comes along and asks you out on a date or asks you to be in a relationship, you have a pretty good idea in your mind if that person is someone that you want to say yes and even get involved with in the first place, or if you're picky and you know it's not the right thing, you'll just say no, which is a hard thing to do sometimes, but you'll say no. Or, second category, are you too picky? Some of this is going to sound weird, but all of this actually happens to somebody I know. Some of you might have a long and detailed list of exactly what you're looking for, down to eye color, hair color, height, favorite college sports team, whatever it is. I actually know a guy who would only date someone who was of the rooted for the same college football team that he did. And he said that he actually had met a girl who was, he found out was a fan of a rival college football team. And he said the second he found out, she became absolutely unattractive to him. That's an example of too picky. If anyone has ever told you that John the Baptist or the Blessed Virgin Mary would not qualify for your list, you're probably too picky. Unless you're perfect, you do not have the right to demand perfection of another person. What you're looking for is not perfection. You're looking for perfect for you. So if you have a list that is too detailed, you might be too picky. The third category is not picky enough. And this is the topic that I'd like to focus most of my talk on today. And that can be really summed up in one word, and that is settling. You originally have high standards. You originally want someone who shares your faith, who shares your worldview, who shares your moral standards, who wants the same things out of life that you do. But then you look at the world that you live in, and the older you get, and the more you see your friends pairing up as couples or getting engaged or getting married, the more you feel the pressure of wanting that for yourself. And you feel like maybe the dreams that you're dreaming for yourself are unrealistic. Maybe you need to renegotiate your standards, and you start to settle for less than what your heart and your conscience tells you you were made for. So if you're picky, I want to say good for you. Stay strong and hold out as long as it takes for the one that God has made for you. You're going to look back after your wedding day to that right person, that perfect person for you, and you are going to be so grateful that you waited as long as it takes. If you're too picky, you need to relax. You need to re-examine your priorities. You need to re-examine what it is you're looking for and re-examine what it is you want out of life. If you're not picky enough, I'm going to encourage you to re-examine your standards and re-examine your priorities, because there's many reasons we settle in a relationship. I've already talked about some. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's just loneliness and the ache that you have in your heart for the sacrament of marriage. I really believe that we don't talk enough about the call to the vocation of marriage. We talk a lot about when someone has a vocation to religious life. Maybe you know someone who had the call to become a nun or become a brother or a priest. And when you see that person who has discerned their vocation to religious life, it's like they light up the entire room. They are so happy and they're so joyful to have found their vocation. Well, I truly believe that those of us who are called to the vocation of marriage, the same thing happens to us. We have a joy when we think of the vocation. We have the desire in our hearts. We have the ache. Sometimes it's just a little bit harder for us because we have to wait for God to call our spouse to the same vocation, and we had for the two of us to meet. So sometimes it's a little bit more difficult than the vocation to the religious life. But the call is still there. And if you have it, you know what I'm talking about because you feel it in your hearts. For me, it was the loneliness of Friday nights. And I call, there's a few years after I graduated from college, I called them my Blockbuster and China Walk years, because I would go to China Walk and I would pick up my Chinese takeout. Then I would go to Blockbuster and I would rent some new movie release, and I would go home and think about my parents who were out on a Friday night date and all my girlfriends who had boyfriends who were out on their Friday night dates. Friday nights is just not a great night to be single unless you have like a huge community of friends to go, single friends to go hang out with. So Friday nights for me were the worst. I hated Friday nights when I was alone and just thinking about the fact I was single and not in a relationship. Or some of you might have had from Sweet Aunt Betty over Christmas or Grandpa or Uncle Joe kind of that well-intentioned advice that they pull the old maid card on you. And guys, you can have people pull the old maid card on you like, oh, if you're not dating someone by this age, well, you're just never going to get married and you must be too picky and maybe you need to think about dating so-and-so down the street. And I got that a lot, especially from my grandmother. So she was just convinced I was going to be an old maid if I wasn't married by 22. So should we compromise on the important stuff is a big question, because there are so many standards that we could have that are hard standards in the world that we live in. And I think there's three main ones that we as Catholic young adults are often tempted to compromise on. So the bulk of my talk today, I'm going to focus on these three. The first is to compromise on the Catholic faith question. I bet most of you in this room who are Catholic and feel called to the vocation of marriage want to marry someone who shares your Catholic faith. I was hosting a radio show a couple years ago, and I had a relationships expert on the show as my special guest, and it was a live call-in show. So I still remember the girl's name. She was Sarah from Atlanta, and she called in with a question for my guest, and she said, I am 21 years old, and I totally want to be married. I know it's my vocation. And she said, I live in Atlanta. I live in the midst of the Bible Belt where there are not a lot of Catholic young adults. And the college I go to, they're mostly Protestant or not Christian. And she said, I am getting a ton of pressure from my friends and even from my family to date someone who's not Catholic, even though I want to marry a Catholic. And she said, this Baptist guy asked me out, and then another guy asked me out who wasn't a Christian from school, and everybody was so mad at me and thought I was making such a bad choice by turning them down and not dating them. And she said, what do I do? Am I being too picky? So the relationships expert that I had on this show began to talk to her, and basically, I couldn't believe it, he pulled the old maid card on her. And he said, you know what? Maybe you're too picky. And maybe you need to re-examine your standards, because if you want to be married and that is the most important thing in your life, then you better date whoever comes along, basically. He said to her, this is what he said to her, when you're 45 and still single, don't call me and complain. And, you know, usually as a host of a show, and I've invited the guest on, and usually the host tends to agree with the guest, and, you know, everything's nice. I was, like, literally ready to come across the table with this person. I was like, I cannot believe you're telling this 21-year-old girl this. So I said, well, Sarah, thank you to my guest. I said, Sarah, I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree. And I just told her my story. I said, Sarah, I too desire to be married so deeply. I said, but I know that more than anything, I want a man who will sit in a pew with me at least every Sunday, maybe even at daily mass, and that both of us can go up to communion together. On a Saturday afternoon, we could both drive to the church to go to confession, maybe with our kids someday. I said, I want a guy who will pray with me at night. I want a guy who's going to teach my kids the rosary. I want a guy who I don't have to debate with whether or not we baptize our children Catholic or if we have godparents or all those questions that those in interfaith marriages have to wrestle with. And I'm not here to say that interfaith marriages don't work. I know that often they do, and often they turn out happily. But it also can put a lot of stress, especially on kids. And I said, Sarah, if God has put in your heart a desire to marry a Catholic, don't compromise. She's like, thank you, thank you. I just feel like I'm an idiot because everyone around me is telling me I'm never going to get married. And maybe someone is telling you the same thing, but that's a decision that nobody can make for you. You have to discern that for yourself. Do you feel that the Catholic faith is number one for you? And if it is number one, then you can't put the desire to date someone and the desire to get married ahead of your desire to remain in the fullness of faith and to share that with someone. And that takes a lot of trust in God, that God is going to bring you that person who's going to share your faith. It takes a lot of trust, and it might take some time. But if it's important to you, then it's not worth compromising on. St. Paul has a very hard saying in 2 Corinthians, but I wanted to mention it here because some of you might be wrestling with this question. I just really want you to pray about it. Is settling on compromising on the Catholic faith issue or just faith compatibility in general worth it? St. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, "Do not be mismated with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with iniquity? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? What has a believer in common with an unbeliever? For we are the temple of the living God." So yes, you could meet a girl in a bar who's not a Christian and doesn't have faith. But think about your future children. Think about all the nights that you're going to go to bed and might not be able to pray together before you go to bed, or pray a morning offering together when you get up, and how deeply that impacts your marriage and your communion with one another, and your communion with God. So if you're thinking about settling on the faith question, I just really challenge you to renegotiate. And I brought some books. I love reading books on relationships. Some of you might be like me. Some of you think that's awful, but I love reading books about relationships. And the first one I'm going to recommend was written by my dad. Have any of you seen this book, The ABCs of Choosing a Good Husband, The ABCs of Choosing a Good Wife? My dad wrote these. He actually wrote these the summer before my freshman year of college. So by the time I got to campus, I was absolutely convinced I would never get married as soon as somebody figured out my dad had written the A to Z book on dating. I was convinced. But these two books, they talk about the question of interfaith versus same-faith marriages. And there's a lot of statistical research done on just the effect of not a shared faith in the home, especially the effect on children. So if you're thinking about wrestling with this issue, I really encourage you to check out the chapter on interfaith marriages in the ABC's books. Another area that I think we are easily tempted to settle or to compromise on, which I actually think is even more dangerous than the faith question, is finding someone who shares your Catholic faith, but you have no shared interests except the Catholic faith. And I don't know if any of you have run into this, but it deeply impacted my life because I at one point briefly dated a guy who, what we had in common was the Catholic faith. We both came from great, large Catholic families, and we both were very committed to our Catholic faith and loved the Catholic Church, loved the Catholic faith. And so I thought that was enough. I'm like, great, this is the wonderful Catholic boy that God brought me. And yet we had nothing else in common. And I easily convinced myself that what he was interested in, I thought, well, this is cool. This is interesting. But I was interested in completely different things. For instance, I love to read. This guy had read one book in the last 3 years that wasn't relating to a college textbook. And I love going to Barnes & Noble and looking through books and having a coffee. Just never did it. He never did it. It just wasn't his thing. And so after we dated for a little while, I realized, you know what? We don't have anything else in common. Marriage is a long, long time. Those are a lot of nights to pray the rosary and then twiddle our thumbs and look at each other and have really not a lot in common. But I think it can be, it's a more subtle form, but it's also dangerous because when you marry someone, you don't just want to marry someone who shares your faith. You want to marry your best friend who you have tons of things in common with. Shared interests, shared worldview, shared thoughts, shared hobbies, at least one or two shared hobbies so that you can have fun together and enjoy the same thing. You don't have to be carbon copies of each other. But really to share a lot in common, to be friends that you would naturally be friends anyway, that the Catholic faith can't be the only thing that joins you together as friends, because marriage is just a long, long time. So I encourage you to watch out for that, because I have to tell you, until I was in the relationship, and for a while, it took me a long time to even see what I had done, that I told myself, you know, the Catholic faith is enough, and this is what I was looking for. So watch out for that, too, and don't settle for someone who doesn't have shared interests in you in many, many different ways. The third way to settle, and this is very dangerous, too, and maybe easier to recognize, but also very hard to make the decision not to settle for this, is don't settle for negative traits and patterns that you think you can change. How often do you hear the stories of a couple who's dating where the guy's an alcoholic and the girl knows it, but she thinks that if they get married, things will be different? Or some form of abuse, maybe verbal or, God forbid, physical abuse, but you think you can change it. For you guys, maybe you're dating a girl who is a huge gossip and just has a very loose tongue. And you think that someday, by marrying her, she's not going to gossip about you. Think again. There are a lot of hair appointments at a hair salon where a girl can do a lot of gossiping. A narcissistic woman who's just totally into herself. And you think that by marrying her, she's going to be totally into you. That might not change. Laziness. If you have a really lazy boyfriend, girls, don't think that's going to change when you marry him. Because a lot of these issues are deep-seated patterns. And it is so easy for us to think that over the long haul, that, you know, you can kind of chip away at your girlfriend or chip away at your boyfriend and somehow change who they are as a person. That's not fair to them or to you. But it's easy to settle because maybe that person is Catholic. Or maybe that person is like a huge tennis player and so are you. And you think that this is going to make you happy for the next 40 years. 40 years, 50 years, 60 years is a long time to live with a deep-seated negative pattern. And it won't just affect you, it'll affect your future children someday too. You cannot change a person. Marriage cannot change a person. Only God can change a person. And I'm not saying change is not possible, but maybe it's taking a step back and saying, we're just going to be friends and just praying for that person to see what God can do in their life. But missionary dating to change someone's personality or change someone's deep-seated negative trait is a very dangerous place to be. There's another book I want to recommend to you that was so helpful to me with this issue. The title's kind of crazy, but I think you should buy it just because of the title. It's called How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. This is my all-time favorite book on relationships. When I started dating my husband, I read it 2 times, no offense to him. Just to make sure. It is so good. This is written by, actually, it was an evangelical pastor, wrote this book. His name is Dr. John Van Epp. And after years of being a pastor and having all these married couples come to him with problems in their marriage, he realized that most of his career as a pastor was marriage counseling. So he actually left being a pastor and went into full-time marriage counseling and really looking at the deep-seated patterns and marriage problems, and he has put together he's actually most popular with college students. He puts together this seminar called How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. He goes to college campuses all over the country and gives this seminar. He's written the book that's pretty much the same message that's in the seminar. And he teaches you how to avoid falling into the traps that most marriages that are in crisis, you know, these things could have been avoided if you avoided them in your dating life. things like you have to investigate the background of the person you're dating, the boyfriend or girlfriend. He even teaches you how to ask the questions about ex-girlfriends and ex-boyfriends. That, I think, is worth the price of the book right there, how you get the information and why they broke up, because that matters. That matters, and it will affect your life too. But in this book, he talks about some of those deep-seated negative patterns. And actually, he has a section where he encourages you not to escalate the relationship for a certain amount of time, because in order for knowledge of these patterns, for you to have knowledge of these patterns, you need time. Because anyone can hide negative things for the first several months of a dating relationship. Everybody puts their best foot forward in the beginning. So he encourages you to have time to be able to recognize these problems, to recognize these patterns. So I love this book. I encourage you to get it at the speaker book table where the focus books are near the ballroom. I have a limited amount of copies, and we put them on a great sale because I know college students, money is hard to come by. So we have them on sale, How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. It is so worth the few bucks of the book to buy and just really look at some of these things when you're early on in a relationship, so that down the road you don't have to have these regrets. I have some Bible verses that I want to share with you for waiting. And waiting is the hard part when you have, you know, made the decision that you're going to keep your standards high, that you're not going to settle. It is so hard then to just be in kind of this no man's land of when's it going to happen. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that tonight in the keynote talk, and I hope that you guys can come. But it's a hard place to be. It can be very painful. It can be very lonely. But God's promises to us, if we can stay strong and we can wait as long as it takes, are so powerful. In Sirach chapter 1, the Bible says, "A patient man will endure until the right moment, and then joy will burst forth for him." And then King David says in Psalm 37, "Wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you." And then St. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, of course, that love is patient. And then Jeremiah 29:11, and I know most of you know this verse. "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and to give you a hope." So for those of you who might have fallen into the not picky enough category, what can you do going forward? And having trouble raising the bar high, as Jennifer Nettles sings in the song Sugarland. The first is to pray. And I don't say that lightly, and you probably are going to hear that a lot this weekend, you know, in discernment of different things, pray. But really do pray. And ask God to reveal to your heart what you were made for. If you were made for more, God's going to tell you what that is. God's going to reveal that to you. Go in front of Jesus in adoration and just sit there, maybe bring a pen and paper, and just pray about what your standards should be in who you should date. Are you called to marry someone who shares your Catholic faith and to raise a Catholic family with a united force and a husband and wife and a mom and dad? Is that what God has called you to? Let him reveal that to you. Are you called to marry someone who shares more interests than just your Catholic faith? God's going to reveal what those things are too. So pray and ask God for the wisdom and perseverance to raise the bar high and keep your standards high. The second thing you can do is to write down your standards with a pen and paper. And actually, there was statistical research done that those who are trying to make a commitment, if they just make a verbal commitment, it's like worth maybe 10% success rate of actually following through. Because if you make a verbal or a mental commitment to yourself, it's easy when, you know, some gorgeous girl walks in the room who's not Catholic, or some handsome guy, it's easy to say, "Oh, wait, what? Did I really, is the Catholic faith that important to me? Like, he's kind of cute. I want to go out with him." So writing down your commitment, and I wish I had the exact statistics, but I think it raises from like 10% to 90% that you will keep your commitment if you actually write it down physically with a pen and paper and keep it with you. The third thing is to have a friend or a sibling or a college roommate to hold you accountable to your standards. And this helped me a lot when I was in college. I had a great friend who held me accountable to my standards even when I didn't want to be held accountable to my standards. And I must admit, a few times I was mad at her for saying, "Stephanie, that guy's not good enough for you, or you shouldn't go out and date with him," because I wanted to be dating someone, but he wasn't right for me, and he did not hold to my standards. And my girlfriend was so good about telling me what I needed to hear even when I got mad at her for it. And find that person who can be that for you. Maybe it's, you know, your gym buddy or something. Maybe girls, maybe it's one of your roommates in college who can just hold you accountable and kind of be the check and balance for you when you need someone else to just kind of center you for the standards that you have for yourself. So those three things will help you, because when someone asks you out who saying yes would be settling, it's really hard. It's hard to say no. It's hard to walk away and to trust God that He's still out there. Finally, in my last few minutes, I just want to share with you on a personal level just kind of my plea and my prayer for you to hold out for not just raise the bar high, but to hold out for knock your socks off. Because when I was in college, I thought I had the most romantic dreams of anyone I know. When I was in high school, I just wanted to be Elizabeth Bennet and marry Mr. Darcy. When I was like 7, I was in love with MacGyver, and I just wanted to marry MacGyver, even though we had like a 30-year age difference between the two. I didn't care. I wanted a man who would be my hero and who would completely sweep me off my feet. But at the same time, I absolutely had convinced myself unconsciously that my dreams for my life were way bigger than God's dreams could possibly be for my life. And by the time I was 25, 26, I would just have been happy to find a guy who was Catholic and who had a couple shared interests and, you know, would have a good life. And I always thought that I probably was going to have to settle, because whatever God chose for me was going to probably have to be settling for, you know, settling according to my standards, which were pretty high. The list was pretty long. I met my husband on the internet. CatholicMatch.com. And I'm going to tell you the story tonight, so come to my keynote so I can tell you the whole story, because it takes too long to tell right now with my few minutes left. But I met my husband on the internet, but before I met him, I hated CatholicMatch.com. Everybody I talked to on there was like, nope, nope, nope. Wasn't interested in anyone. Actually, if my husband was up here, he would tell you that when he first started emailing me, I completely ignored him, which I don't think is actually true, because I don't remember it that way. I thought my emails to him were very polite, like, "Oh, hi, Peter. Thanks so much for your email. God bless you, too. Bye." And I don't know why, but he kept writing me, and he would send me these beautiful, respectful, funny, kind emails, and they'd be paragraphs long, and I would let 2 or 3 weeks go by, and then I would send my, "Thanks so much for your email. God bless. Bye." And then, like, the next instant, I would get another email back from him with just paragraphs of so nice, and he would tell me all these things, and I wasn't paying any attention, because I hated the internet. I hated CatholicMatch.com. And then one day, I just felt really bad that I never really told this guy anything or asked him any questions, so I just decided to start asking him questions. I knew he had been in the military, and I knew that he had started writing me like the week he got back from his last tour in Iraq, and so I decided, well, let me ask him about his family or about his faith. And his pictures were really cute. He was really cute. His Catholic Match profile, he had great pictures, especially the army uniform. You girls know what I'm talking about. It's pretty much, it's pretty irresistible. There was one picture of him riding a camel in the desert of Afghanistan, and his hair was kind of sticking out. I'm like, oh, wow. But I was also pretty sure that a guy who was that cute, who's in the army, like, he couldn't be that Catholic. Like, I really wanted a real Catholic, and I knew he had muscles, but I didn't know if he had Catholic muscles, you know? So I said, well, so tell me about your faith. Tell me about your Catholic faith. So he started talking about his family and his faith and how much it meant to him. I was like, wow, seems pretty squared away. So I asked him if he liked to read. He's like, yes, it's my favorite thing. Love to read. So I said, well, what are your favorite topics? These were all separate emails, by the way. I just had my one-liners, you know, and God bless Stephanie. And so he said, oh, my favorite topics are philosophy and theology. I was like, that was my major in college. I got this in the bag. So I said, well, tell me your favorite authors. Well, I just finished reading a book by Scott Hahn, and there's one by Peter Kreeft I just read. It was really good. But actually, I'm working my way through Thomas's Summa, and it's going pretty well. It's kind of hard reading, but my goal is to finish the whole Summa Theologica. And I was like, oh, hi. So from that point on, I started learning more about Peter Weinert and found out not only did we share the Catholic faith, but we had the same brand and flavor of ice cream in common, our favorite. Breyers mint chocolate chip, only the white kind, none of that green dyed stuff, only the white Breyers mint chocolate chip. So when he told me that was his favorite food, his favorite dessert, I thought he had somehow been stalking me and actually knew that that was my favorite. I was like, what? We had the same favorite authors, although his favorite is G.K. Chesterton, mine is C.S. Lewis. But that was like nice Catholic flirting. We could go back and forth and fight about who is better. We liked some of the same movies. When we were little, our parents disciplined us the same way. We had like our parents had all these things in common, even though our families had never met. And by the time Peter lived in Washington, D.C., I lived in South Carolina. We were over 500 miles away. So every time we went out on a date, it was a plane ride or a very, very long car ride away from each other. But every time we got together, we just found more and more in common. So many interests, so many shared experiences of life. Even though we had led such very different lives, we had so much in common. And Peter proposed to me on my birthday at the end of that year. And we got married almost 6 months ago. We got married on July 3rd, this past summer. And I have to tell you that this man has blown every dream that I ever had for a spouse out of the water. And this is like the only guy that I didn't try to pursue myself. Like, God brought him to me, and God let him pursue me. He was the only one. Like, usually I could smell out a really good, handsome Catholic guy myself, and I would make sure I was available and the phone number was ready. This guy God totally brought to me. And the huge lesson that I feel like God has taught me through dating Peter and my marriage to Peter is that his dreams for our life are so much bigger than anything we could ever dream for ourselves. So much bigger. And it was so humbling for me just to meet Peter and think, you know, I'm this girl who thinks I have it all together, thinks I have my list of standards, and I'm picky, but I'm not too picky, and whatever. But that God had such an infinite plan for me. And when I was 22 and having my Blockbuster and China Walk Friday nights, God knew that 5.5 years later I'd meet Peter. God knew that. I didn't, but God knew. And that trusting him was the smartest thing that I ever did. And even when I didn't trust, he gave me the grace at least to persevere. So I just challenge all of you to hold out for knock your socks off. Because I have a husband who brings me flowers at least once a week. Who, I'm 4.5 months pregnant, and I have been so sick. Some nights, like, it was awful. Our first month of marriage, Peter would come home, and there would be, like, a gourmet dinner on the table because I've been watching the Food Network for years, waiting for the opportunity to cook for my husband. And, you know, it was great. The laundry was always done, everything. So then I got pregnant, and I was so super sick. Some days I couldn't even get out of bed or, you know, at most make it to the couch. So Peter would come home. He leaves at 6:30 in the morning. He would come home 5 o'clock at night and have to do the dishes, do the laundry, take care of me, find something for me to eat, then make his own macaroni and cheese for his dinner. Like, never complained, ever, ever. You know, totally just picked up the ball. I have a man who for years saved up his American Airlines frequent flyer miles to surprise me with a trip to Puerto Rico on my birthday last month. Like, this guy is golden. I hope you guys can all find a Peter Weinert. Not mine, but I hope you can all find one for yourself. And guys, you can be this man to knock a girl's socks off. If you pursue holiness, guys, and if you become the strong man of God that every girl is dreaming about, we really don't want Mr. Darcy. We want you to be that man to knock a girl's socks off. That is the way God intended it. And for us who live in these modern times where it is so hard to find someone who shares all the things that we want in life. God can do it if we're faithful. I mean, through the internet, God went ding from Washington, D.C. and ding from Greenville, South Carolina and put us together. And God can do that for you. So my prayer for you is that you will leave this conference where you are told in every talk that you were made for more. And you'll walk out these doors and you're going to go to Mass and you're going to go to adoration, that you would just let God flood your heart with the courage to hold out as long as it takes, to raise that bar as high as God asks you to raise it, and hold out as long as it takes for knock your socks off. So that's my prayer for you. So stay strong, and God bless you all. I can't wait to hear someday all the awesome things He's going to do with all of you. God bless.
This talk was brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. If you would like to listen to more talks, please visit us at www.focusequip.org.